The laws of chemistry are the same everywhere, but every planet has its own mix of chemicals. Every world has its chemistry. You're listening to Western Worlds on astronomy.fm. Hello and welcome back for another conversation here on Western Worlds, an AFM original show heard right here on astronomy.fm. My name is Raymond Francis, and I'm coming to you this week as every week from the Center for Planetary Science and Exploration at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada. Here on Earth, the composition of the atmosphere reveals itself in subtle and pervasive ways. Reactive oxygen affects the formation of minerals, influencing the type of rocks we find on the surface. Large amounts of water vapor drive storms that erode those rocks, carve valleys, power hurricanes, and transport energy across the planet. On another world with different surface materials, exotic chemistry can lead to processes both familiar and exotic. Titan's atmosphere, like Earth's, is rich in nitrogen, but it's the presence of a great variety of hydrocarbons that leads to some surprising differences. Christopher Gline, a geochemist at the Carnegie Institution of Washington, studies the consequences of exotic chemistry on Titan. His models suggest that we may have to rethink how rocks form and evolve, and even our strategy for understanding the history of a place from the rocks that remain. I spoke to Dr. Gline at the Lunar and Planetary Science Conference in The Woodlands, Texas. Dr. Gline, you're presenting this week some research into the geochemistry of Titan and how that might work very differently from what we're used to on Earth.
Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation and interest about thinking about a different type of geochemistry that happens on Titan, where instead of having water like on the Earth or on Mars, we can substitute liquid methane and other liquefied natural gases as the solvent. And then instead of having rocks and minerals like we have in the Earth, we have the analogs, which are solid organic compounds and frozen ices on the surface of Titan that act as the rocks or minerals that can be altered and changed in a geochemical way.
And the reason that we think about this kind of chemistry is because Titan has a very unusual environment on its surface.
Yeah, Titan attracts a lot of interest because unlike many of the other moons like our moon, which are heavily cratered and that lack atmospheres, Titan is unique because it has a thick atmosphere of nitrogen and methane, and the methane can condense, and people talk about a methane hydrological cycle where you can have methane clouds forming in the atmosphere and methane rain and methane rivers and those sorts of features. And people have also detected lakes that are composed of methane and liquid ethane.
And the solid surface around those lakes, what's it made of?
Well, we don't know. That's a big mystery. It's actually really hard to get chemical or compositional data about Titan's surface because Titan has this fantastic thick atmosphere. It's hard to see through. It's thick. It absorbs infrared radiation, which is normally used to deduce chemistry of the surface. So we don't really know what's on the surface.
When we talk about geochemistry, what frame of nature are we talking about? What does geochemistry mean to begin with?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. So it actually means a lot of different things to different people. Some people think about geochemistry, let's say if you're a lunar geochemist, you think about measuring rare earth elements or the whole periodic table, and that means geochemistry. From my perspective, when I'm thinking about fluids like water or aqueous geochemistry in the Earth, what I'm mainly thinking about is how the solid surface or the near surface environment of a planet or a moon can be altered by fluids. Liquids that transport elements or different chemical compounds. So basically mass transfer between different phases of matter near a planetary surface.
Okay. How does that work on the Earth?
On the Earth? So on the Earth, basically, we have water, which is in the ocean and also on the continents. It's fresh water. And you can have rainfall on the continents or the mountains. As this rain falls to the surface, it can interact with different rocks and minerals. And so, for example, if you have a piece of granite on the continents, there are different minerals. One's called potassium feldspar, which is pretty abundant. And the classic example is how you can have a drop of rain, which is weakly acidic, slowly dissolve potassium feldspar to release potassium and silicon into the water, which is carried downstream, eventually reaching the oceans.
Okay. So
Can that be an important process then in changing the way the rocks are composed and how they behave?
Yeah, it's really important on the Earth because you have so many different chemical elements and potentially different minerals that exist in the rocks and then can also form from water. So it leads to a rich variety in the type of minerals and geochemistry we see on the Earth.
Okay. And water is the way that happens. It's only
water. Yeah, water is the game on the Earth. Well, except in sedimentary basins where you can have petroleum. Petroleum is sort of a liquid that can occur in certain environments. And that hasn't really been explored too much as far as geochemistry, but a lot of organic geochemistry and economic geology is concerned with what happens with petroleum.
Okay, so the key players are a solid surface and some liquid solvent that differentially act on it.
That's right. And basically, it's just driven by chemical disequilibrium. You have fresh liquid. On Earth, it's water on Titan. It'd be methane or ethane. Fresh liquid, and then it's interacting with a solid. So you have a disequilibrium, and the solid can dissolve in the liquid, just like if you took pure table salt and added it to water or sugar to water, you can have it dissolve because it's at chemical disequilibrium.
Okay. So now, how is it different on Titan? What works differently there?
Well, the obvious difference is the fluid. Because Titan's atmosphere has methane, you can have these liquid hydrocarbons. I mentioned it's basically like a liquefied natural gas that we transport on the Earth to fuel some of our homes, where it's mainly composed of liquid methane, so that'd be CH4, and then also ethane and propane. We think of the main hydrocarbon players as far as the liquid's concerned, which is actually interesting when you think about comparing it to the Earth, because on Earth, really, the liquid is water, and that leads to a lot of intriguing possibilities. But on Titan, you can actually have, in some sense, new complexities that we are starting to appreciate, because now instead of having one liquid, you can have three liquids, and those liquids behave different chemically when they interact with different solids.
Oh, really?
You have this range of possibilities depending on how much ethane or how much propane or methane you have in the liquid.
So it could be a lot more complex.
In some sense. From the perspective of the liquid, it's anticipated to be more complex. From the perspective of solids, it's not as complex because it turns out when you dissolve an organic compound, a good example I'll give is benzene. So benzene's a toxin on the Earth, but at Titan temperatures, it'd still be a toxin, but it's frozen as a solid. And so if benzene gets in contact with, let's say, a liquid ethane lake, the benzene can partially dissolve. But basically, benzene existed as a solid, and now it's just dissolved as a liquid, but it's still a benzene molecule. On the Earth, if you dissolve a solid like, let's say, calcium carbonate, as that dissolves, calcium ions and carbonate ions go into solution. So you've turned one solid now into two constituents, and then the different constituents that are in a water fluid can combine in different ways. You have this combination chemistry. You can combine AB or AC or AD or BZ, and you can have this really rich variety. Don't think on Titan that can happen simply because of the nature of the materials.
Because benzene isn't going to dissociate the way a salt might.
We don't expect it to. The temperatures are just too cold. Really, to dissociate a benzene molecule, you'd have to start breaking pretty strong chemical bonds.
Right. So what are the temperatures that we have to think about?
Yeah, so the temperatures at the surface of Titan range from about 90 Kelvin to about 94 95 Kelvin.
So like minus 200 Celsius almost.
Yes.
How does that affect the way we think about geochemistry if it's so cold?
There's really only one effect that I've noticed. You might think because it's so cold that the solids will dissolve more slowly.
Mm-hmm.
That actually doesn't really seem to be the case. There's an interesting talk at this week's conference by Mike Malaska from JPL, and he was dissolving solid benzene, so it'd be a benzene mineral, in liquid ethane, and he found that basically it can dissolve to its maximum extent after about 1 hour at 94 Kelvin.
That seems like faster than limestone would dissolve.
It's really fast compared to a lot of minerals on the Earth. A notorious example on the Earth, which geochemists have obsessed about for a long time, is what is the solubility of quartz?
Quartz?
Yeah.
How come?
It's because quartz dissolves so slowly that it's very difficult to know for sure if the liquid has reached saturation or equilibrium.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because quartz is one of these things that's very resistant, at least on Earth.
Yeah, it's hard, and the main reason it's hard and it's so insoluble is the chemical bonds in the quartz crystal structure are very strong. So it's hard to pull off constituents from that crystal, and that's why it takes forever to dissolve.
Okay.
On Titan, you have these organic solids, and it turns out that the forces between the molecules aren't very strong, so they can dissolve pretty rapidly.
Between the molecules, as opposed to within.
Yeah, because you basically, to dissolve a solid, you need to pluck molecules off of the solid and then solvate them into the liquid.
Okay.
So that's the main thing. That was an unexpected finding. Solids dissolve relatively fast. As far as what the low temperature does, it kind of accentuates differences between the solvents. So I'm a chemist. I put on a chemist hat, I should say. I'm also a planetary scientist. And if you think about methane and ethane as liquids, we might think there's this rule in chemistry called like dissolves like.
Okay.
And liquid methane and liquid ethane, from a superficial perspective, are very similar.
Right.
They're both alkane hydrocarbons, so we might expect that they might not be that different as solvents. It turns out at low temperatures, thermodynamics starts to show larger preferences between different solvents and the affinities of different molecules. So that's a big effect, is that we find that on Titan, it seems like these solids are much more soluble in liquid ethane and propane than they are in liquid methane.
Really? So what does that mean for the landscape of Titan then?
So it means that there's going to be probably some unexpected features depending on the location on Titan, how much ethane or how much methane you have. And this will depend on the atmosphere, how much methane gas is in the atmosphere, or how much methane rain falls in a certain location. Is it a dry desert-like region? In a desert, we might expect liquid methane, because it evaporates easier, to the lakes in the desert to be mainly composed of ethane. So if that's the case, then maybe the rocks that are at the bottom of the lake would actually be more soluble.
Oh, interesting.
So you can kind of think of this weird twilight zone kind of scenario, where on Earth, let's say, you start evaporating a lake and minerals form. Mm-hmm. And you just keep doing that, and you eventually form more and more soluble minerals. On Titan, though, because the liquid actually changes, you get these interesting behaviors. On the Earth, as you lose water, the solvent is still water. But on Titan, as the liquid evaporates, you have more and more ethane and less methane. So the rocks and minerals are actually going to be more soluble as the lake evaporates more. So you can imagine these scenarios where you evaporate some methane, you might form an evaporite mineral. Mm-hmm. But then, let's say you keep evaporating methane, that evaporite mineral now might become more soluble because there's more ethane in the lake. So then it might redissolve.
Oh, okay.
So these are questions that I'm exploring that are really highlighting the intriguing differences between Titan and the Earth.
You can imagine the complexities of trying to do field geology in a place like that.
Yeah, I eventually think that this could be something useful, because on Mars, at least, we're starting to look at stratigraphic sequences of different minerals and chemical compositions. So these types of models and questions that I'm posing are potentially the first step to future Titan exploration, where we start thinking about what type of stratigraphic sequences might be observed by a rover or some kind of lander on Titan. I think it's a good tool to get us thinking about what we might expect.
A lot of the surface of Titan is thought to have these kind of organic compounds on it, but there's supposed to be a lot of water ice somewhere a little below that, right?
Yeah, so basically, based on what we know about the abundances of the chemical elements in the solar system, which it has a large abundance of oxygen, and then also Titan is relatively low density. The Earth is mainly a ball of rock, and it's really dense, so is the Moon, but Titan has a relatively low density that's a little bit greater than that of water ice.
Oh.
So we think actually about half of the mass of Titan is made of ice or liquid water in some form in the interior, and then the rest is rock that's buried really far down in the interior.
Okay.
So all this hydrocarbon chemistry I'm talking about is really analogous to the Earth, where you have a thin veneer of this volatile substance, methane, at the surface that's doing all this chemistry. But then the subsurface is expected to be a lot different.
Right. It's just like the inside of the Earth is full of rock and magmatic processes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. How do you interrogate this world of 90 Kelvin and geochemistry? How do you start to think about that and come to the answers that you've just discussed?
Right. That's a good question. So basically, the first thing that helps me is all the hard work that my predecessors and colleagues now are working on getting data from Titan. None of this is possible without their hard work. Mm-hmm. And mainly the key pieces of information is we see these geological landforms, and people are now trying to interpret what type of processes might be responsible. Some of them look like they may have formed by fluvial weathering, so the action of some kind of liquid, which you think is liquid methane or ethane,
right,
dissolving or precipitating minerals. So that's one piece of information. Another is that we actually know what types of chemical compounds actually can form on Titan. Although I say that it's really difficult to figure out what's on the surface, people can obtain spectral data from the atmosphere. It turns out that methane and nitrogen in Titan's atmosphere are engaged in this really cool photochemistry, where you can start with methane and nitrogen, and you can build up larger organic molecules by ultraviolet light from the sun or other charged particles from space, causing chemical reactions to happen. So you can turn a methane molecule into an ethane molecule. You can also form other more complicated molecules like acetylene or benzene or large polyaromatic hydrocarbons.
And that's just catalyzed by sunlight?
We don't know the exact details of what's happening. The driving force is sunlight breaking chemical bonds, but then many other different reactions can occur, which leads to the buildup of complexity in terms of organic chemistry.
Okay.
So we have some idea of what type of molecules are in the atmosphere, and then the current thinking is that those molecules eventually are transported by atmospheric processes and snow or rain out onto the surface.
Okay.
And then the mystery really begins, is what type of processes on the surface can transport these molecules and concentrate them or alter them in some fashion.
Okay. Well, you mentioned some experimental work, but are you mostly doing modeling to come to these answers, or?
Yeah, so far I've really been engaged in modeling, but I'm interested in potentially doing experiments in the future. There's been a lot of work, actually. A lot of my models are based on work that was done in the chemical engineering industry. It's sort of a weird place to think where you might base information on Titan, but in the past 50-odd years, people, chemical engineers, have been really concerned about transporting liquefied natural gas. So they're interested in the solubilities of different things like dry ice or acetylene or other hydrocarbons like hexane, because these are impurities that are present in liquefied natural gas. And if you don't know the solubilities of these things, well, you might be building a large expensive pipeline. And if this pipeline gets plugged up by some kind of solid precipitates, then that would be a bad news for that industry.
And of course, the hydrocarbons that we're handling in that industry are biologically derived for the most part, whereas that's not the case for Titan.
Yeah, so ultimately those organic chemicals in the petrochemical industry are derived from biological processes. So mm-hmm. basically you can extract petroleum and then you use chemical reforming mm-hmm. to form the hydrocarbons you want.
Yeah.
And then methane gas is also extracted from natural gas deposits.
Right. But Titan, of course, this is all coming just from the origin of that body, or?
Well, we think. That's an ongoing debate. So where does the methane and ethane come from? How does this game get started, basically, on Titan? And there are two schools of thought. One is that Titan was built from similar building blocks as comets or outer solar system material. And those materials, we think, contain methane. If you look at comets, many comets contain a small abundance of methane that has been detected.
Okay.
So you could maybe build Titan and accumulate methane by just building Titan from comets or things like comets. Another idea is that maybe Titan did not start with very much methane, but methane was produced inside Titan. So there's been a lot of interest in whether there could be hydrothermal systems of some sort deep in Titan's interior where you could have liquid water and rocks that are at least moderately warm, which could lead to the formation of methane through inorganic or possibly biological processes.
Right, biological. There's been those hints of Titan as an exotic kind of place for life.
Yeah, so that's, I can't really comment intelligently on that. I don't think anyone really can. It's a possibility we need to think about. Seems to be complex organic chemistry happening, and I think exploring Titan and developing my type of models is really useful, because I think if we want to understand, let's say, how life can originate on a planet, we need a lot better understanding of what type of organic chemistry is possible in a planetary environment over long periods of geologic time.
Right.
Those are just things that we can't probe experimentally, so I think that's a really valuable incentive to explore places like Titan.
Yeah, so Titan is the lab for that then.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for talking to us, and good luck teasing out those puzzles.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to Western Worlds on astronomy.fm. Let's go to the discussion.
So in planetary science, very often we're talking about rocks and the surface processes on some planet or some other body. But here, Dr. Glein is looking at the chemistry, the very atoms and molecules that make up those materials, solid and liquid. And, you know, we have to remind ourselves sometimes that chemistry is at the root of what we're doing. When it's just acting as a solid, of course we can treat it as a material that's solid and behaves a certain way. But as soon as you start changing phases, things get more complicated and you have to ask about chemistry and solubility. And he's still trying to figure and puzzle how that works on Titan.
Yeah, Titan is very interesting in terms it has really thick atmosphere compared to like where we are concentrating right now on Mars, where it's comparatively thin. And so having thick atmosphere would obviously, as he says, changes a lot of things on the surface as well. And hence understanding, because there is a thick layer of atmosphere, you cannot really directly see the surface. And that also changes how you look at Titan just by, you know, while looking at Mars or Moon, where you can directly see the surface, probably recognize all the features on it. But that makes it harder for Titan.
That's right. And part of the reason that he's being so much in modeling is because we can't do imaging. Even if we have a spacecraft that flies by Titan every now and then, Cassini, we're actually not able to see the surface very well. We have only the synthetic aperture radar on board that can give us some information now and then. But it's very difficult to do much better than that, seeing through that thick haze.
It's more like Venus.
In some sense, you know, and that's it's the same way that we looked at Venus with the Magellan radar. And the surface, like Venus, the surface is really exotic, and we have to think differently about the way the surface processes happen there.
And unlike Venus, though, Titan is very interesting for other reasons. I mean, the reason why we want to know all this stuff is because, of course, Titan is really a potential candidate for where life would exist, potentially.
But an exotic one, for sure.
Yeah, a very exotic one. I mean, we see organisms on Earth that live off, you know, the methane at the bottom of the oceans and stuff like that. So, and you know, where you have a liquid form and solid form of stuff, you start kind of thinking, oh, maybe what can live in those kind of environments?
Yeah, we have a solvent and we have an energy source. The sun is clearly doing some chemistry there, breaking up these molecules and making rain and storms happen. And we have organic molecules, right? Some of them polycyclic and some of them quite simple. Those are the things that you might associate with life. But it's really cold. It's really strange. Yeah. And it's very, so there's a lot to be figured out.
Yeah, we're very used to looking for life as we know it, right? Mm-hmm. Where with water and and very Earth-like, but broaden our horizons, I think, and know that we have weird types of organisms on Earth don't necessarily live off those things, or not the majority of the time anyway.
I think that reminds me of something from the last season we had with Chris McKay. He really talked about what kind of life we are looking at. Are we looking at the life we have here on Earth, or is it like completely different? And in terms of Titan, we don't know, because I mean there is methane and ethane. Do we really know in what kind of cold temperature could in such liquids or solids or different phases can we find life?
Also, it's worth to mention that the Titan is very cold, about -200 degrees Celsius, and any chemical process is very slow there. So for life to form there, their metabolic process is probably very, very slow because of such a cold temperature on Titan.
You'd expect, But then he was finding in the modeling that some of that dissolution seems to be able to happen fairly quickly. But for more complex chemistry, it's hard to imagine. So cold, so slow. Yeah.
And also the fact that you were talking at first, if the things change really fast, for example, you know, if something evaporates, changes the content of the liquid, if there is life in that kind of liquid, it would have to adapt really, really fast. Otherwise, it's going to die, right? Because if the components of the liquid change, it either adapts or... I don't know.
Well, of course, right? We have organisms on Earth that they can live in salt water, but not in fresh.
Yeah.
Right? But water is water, nonetheless.
Yeah.
And here, the solvent is not always going to be the same. You know, liquid methane mixed with ethane, that's changing concentrations.
Yeah.
But maybe those kinds of changes, you know... Sometimes environmental change drives evolution and adaptation, right?
Yeah.
So that might be a help, or it might be a challenge. It's hard to say.
I mean, we see organisms here that can live in a wide variety of environments, right? Mm-hmm. But like Parshi mentioned, it's that how fast does that change and how can the organism change with it is a problem. I mean, there's organisms that can live in extreme cold and extreme heat and vacuum and high pressures, but they have to be able to adapt or go into some sort of a state where they can adapt through those changes. It's really interesting to think about.
And maybe, of course, the interesting place is not the surface. Maybe underneath the surface, where Titan should have some water ice, and even maybe these rocks at the surface, some of them are made of water ice. What's underneath? Are there places down below? You know, what are the source of all that methane? We talked about that in the interview. Is it just all from the original formation of the body, or is some of it being generated in some deep reservoir somewhere?
Over time, I mean...
Some of it could be lost, some could be broken down under radiation from the sun. And on Mars, when we think we see methane, we figure it's got to be new.
Yeah.
And it has to either come from a biological or a geological process. And we haven't really figured that out for Mars, which surely I don't think we've even come close to guessing on Titan.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what's deep down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there were ideas floating around to send out, I think it was a ship or something.
Yes, I heard of the boat.
Yeah, the boat.
The Titan Mare Explorer idea, yeah.
Yeah, it's maybe that can help. I don't know how much it can go below, or it can send instruments below in the liquid. But yeah, it would be cool to see stuff sent down in the liquid onto the water ice layer, or I don't know what kind of things you would find there.
Yeah, because, well, I guess Huygens was meant to be able to at least sense the surface of the liquid, but then it landed on a solid place.
Mm-hmm.
which was just good. We hadn't had either before. But yeah, you know, what are the dynamics of those? How do they flow? How do they move? How do they, you know, if evaporation is a big thing, does that drive the flow and the dynamics in those lakes and ponds?
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of unknowns there.
Oh, yeah.
To drop a $2 billion boat onto this onto the surface there.
I don't think it was quite, because I think it was in the round against Insight.
Yeah, right? I think it was
a relatively cheap.
Low budget.
Yeah, still hundreds of millions, right?
Yes. Not billions, yeah.
But even so, I mean, you know, any new information from the surface of Titan, because Huygens didn't last very long, right? It landed and we got very short amount of data out of that. And so anything's better than nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this in previous roundtables, sending an aircraft instead of landing it on the surface. We can probably have an aircraft that hovers around taking pictures, getting us data on the surface, and probably then we can send something that can land on it.
Yep.
Probably we need a reconnaissance type machine to go first.
Yeah, yeah, below the clouds but above the surface. Yeah.
Yeah.
Robotic aircraft. And interestingly, you know, they have the opposite problem to what we have on Earth. You know, aircraft that we send up here, you know, they can breathe air, they can breathe in oxygen, but they have to carry the fuel to oxidize. On Titan, you could probably harvest the fuel, but you'd have to bring the oxygen with you.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of nitrogen and methane in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Which can be really cool to study as well.
And the atmosphere is denser, so it requires less energy too.
That's right.
Fly.
Which is good because there is less energy available.
You're so far from the sun.
That's right.
Forget about solar energy.
Yeah.
I wonder. I've never even considered that calculation. Under the haze, how much are you going to get? Especially so far out from the sun.
Also, the gravity is less, so it's easier to...
That's right. Yeah, you need less lift.
Lift.
Yeah. Maybe we don't need... Maybe we're just a lighter-than-air aircraft. Titan Zeppelin.
That's our show for this week. Western Worlds is a co-production of the Center for Planetary Science and Exploration and Astronomy.fm. Western Worlds was created by John Moores. This episode was produced by Parshati Patel and Michael Forster and featured an interview by co-host Raymond Francis. Our roundtable discussion featured co-hosts Alyssa Gilbert, Raymond Francis, Parshati Patel, and Zengi Hu. Our editors were Zengi Hu and Parshati Patel, and I'm Raymond Francis. Our theme music is Heliosheath by Sean Kim. You can continue the conversation online and listen to past episodes or learn more about Western Worlds by visiting our website at cpsx.uwo.ca/westernworlds. You can also email us at westernworlds@uwo.ca. On Twitter, we are @WWAFM, and on Facebook, we are facebook.com/westernworlds. On behalf of everyone here at Western Worlds, I'd like to thank you for joining us tonight. I hope you can make world enough in time to join us again next week, right here, on astronomy.fm.